First, he counted the average time that people take to leave a parking space unmolested, about 32 seconds. When another car is waiting to enter, however, that time goes up by as much as 7 seconds. Furthermore, if the person who wants the space honks impatiently, people delay even more, as much as 12 seconds. Why? You don't need the parking space when leaving. A more likely explanation is that demonstrating our possession of a space boosts our sense of empowerment. We human beings engage in little power plays like this all the time, even at the mall. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by William Orem, with help from David Heiss in sociology. I'm Don Glass.
In sports this afternoon, the Blue Jays have fired manager John Gibbons ahead of tonight's series opener in Pittsburgh and replaced him with former skipper Cito Gaston. Toronto has lost 12 of 16 games to fall to 35-39 and is in last place in the American League East. Red Sox pitcher Curt Schilling tells WEEI Radio in Boston he'll undergo an operation on his throwing shoulder Monday, and it could mark the end of his baseball career. The 41-year-old right-hander hasn't pitched this season while trying to rehab the injury. Chicago's division leaders have opened a 3-game interleague series on the north side of the Windy City. The Cubs are looking to snap a 3-game losing streak, while the visiting White Sox are out to extend a 3-game winning streak. It's the only day game on a filled major league slate today. The Cubs and Sox, that game is in the top of the third inning. The score, the Sox 3, the Cubs 1. The St. Louis Cardinals are on the East Coast tonight to open a 3-game series against the Boston Red Sox. Boston leads the AL with a 46-29 record, but they're playing without injured slugger David Ortiz. The Cards are in second place in the NL Central with a 42-32 mark, but they're getting by without injured slugger Albert Pujols. Under a plan announced today, half of Beijing's 3.3 million vehicles will be pulled off the roads during the Olympics to help clean the city's noxious air. The auto ban is part of an anti-pollution plan that also will halt construction and heavy industry during the Olympics, which begins in 7 weeks. That's sports.
Today's programming is made possible by Ratio Architects, designer of the U of I Hotel and Conference Center development located in the UIUC South Research Campus. On the web at ratioarchitects.com.
It's 2:43. The U.S. House today approved a bill to update the laws on electronic surveillance of Americans at home and abroad. The bill also addresses the eavesdropping being done now by the Bush administration without warrants. The Senate is expected to approve the legislation next week. Civil liberties advocates say the bill falls short. NPR's David Wilna reports.
For more than a year, congressional Republicans in the White House had been pushing the Democrats in Congress to revise the 30-year-old Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA. They wanted fewer restrictions on monitoring communications between the U.S. and abroad, and they wanted blanket immunity for phone companies who've been sued for helping the Bush administration conduct domestic spying without the required approval of a FISA court. Yesterday, GOP lawmakers seemed pleased with the deal they'd struck behind closed doors with Democrats. Here's Pete Hoekstra, the top Republican on the House Intelligence Committee.
I think this bill walks a very, very fine line. It gives the intelligence community the tools that we believe that they need and that they believe that they need to keep America safe.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was noticeably less enthusiastic.
It's a balanced bill. I could argue it either way.
It was Majority Leader Steny Hoyer who did much of the House Democrats negotiating on the new FISA bill. He says it's not as good as the bill the House passed last year that provided no immunity for the telecoms.
But it will accommodate the protection of civil liberties going forward. It will, I think, provide for much greater protection than the Senate bill provided for individuals. And it will provide for court review.
That review is to be provided by a U.S. district court. If the telecom firms can show they received orders from the White House to cooperate in the warrantless wiretapping, the lawsuits against them will be dismissed. GOP lawmakers predict every pending lawsuit will be thrown out. That's why some Democrats say the court reviews are a fig leaf for what amounts to immunity. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy considers the court review called for in the FISA update a mere formality.
Some may think it's more than a formality, but I don't see where it allows us to find out who in the White House decided to break the law. That's all I want to find out. I'm not out to get the telephone companies. Telephone companies probably tried to help the country. I don't have a problem there, although a couple of them, of course, said they wouldn't break the law. But I'd like to know who in the White House said, let's break the law.
Kit Bond, who's the top Republican on the Senate Intelligence Committee, agrees on the point that the phone companies should not be punished for going along with what the Bush administration asked them to do.
When the government tells you to do something, I think you all recognize that is something that you need to do.
But Caroline Fredrickson of the American Civil Liberties Union says there's a real danger in letting the telecoms off the hook.
I think we all know that when there are no penalties attached to laws, they're more likely to be violated. And in this case, the incentives are very great because the telecoms get huge government contracts. There's a lot of money at stake here. And for them, they're going to do what the president tells them to do unless there's somebody or some entity providing oversight, and that's the court system.
Still, it appears no one really expects the court system will hold the phone companies responsible after the fact. David Wellner, NPR News, the Capitol.
Barack Obama says he will not take public funds for the general election campaign. Republican John McCain says he will. McCain will get more than $84 million from the government for the fall campaign. Obama thinks he can raise more on his own. NPR's Peter Overby reports on what Obama's decision means.
The match between Obama and McCain shapes up as the most unevenly financed presidential race since 1972. That's the year that Richard Nixon ran for re-election, raised unprecedented sums of money, and spawned the campaign scandals that led Congress to enact public financing. Obama will be the first candidate of either party ever to turn down public money for the fall campaign. He's counting on his new internet-driven strategies for raising cash. He talked about it all yesterday in a video to his supporters.
We've won the Democratic nomination by relying on ordinary people coming together to achieve extraordinary things.
That's true of Obama's 1.5 million donors today. But Fred Wertheimer, head of the watchdog group Democracy 21, says it didn't start out that way.
In the year 2007, 54% of his contributions came in contributions of $1,000 or more, and much of that money was raised by bundlers.
Bundlers are people who solicit friends and colleagues for checks that they bundle for delivery to the campaign. And Wertheimer says Obama wouldn't be where he is without them.
He has not created a parallel system of public financing.
But Obama has created by far the largest system of small voluntary donors that American politics has ever seen. It's changing the landscape for 2008 and beyond. Yesterday, McCain immediately accused Obama of breaking his word. McCain's campaign said Obama had promised to negotiate with McCain so that they'd both take public money and limit spending by their national party committees. Obama's people said McCain had gamed the primary public financing system to get a four-month head start and also unleashed independent groups to run attack ads against Obama. Bradley Smith, a former chairman of the Federal Election Commission, says they're both putting a principled face on a stark reality. He starts with Obama.
He's not taking the government money because he can raise a lot of private money and outspend John McCain. And anything else he says, it's just political claptrap. I don't blame him for that any more than I blame John McCain. John McCain is taking the government money because it is the best deal for him to compete in this election.
Whoever wins in November, advocates of public financing say they'll lobby Congress next year to fix the system. And both candidates do have legislative records of support for public financing. Brad Smith is among the skeptics.
There will be no clamor whatsoever from the American people to have more of their tax dollars spent on political campaigns.
Smith and others also ask whether public financing is still relevant. They point to Obama's armies of small donors and to the independent groups that are increasingly aggressive in campaigns. Just one example from this week, MoveOn.org and the Public Employees Union AFSCME put up this anti-McCain ad, a young mother holding her baby.
John McCain, when you say you would stay in Iraq for 100 years, were you counting on Alex? Because if you were, you can't have him.
A week's worth of airtime cost $543,000. Nothing in the public financing law would help either McCain or Obama counter ads like that. Peter Overby, NPR News, Washington.
The Supreme Court has made it easier for older workers to win age discrimination cases. Yesterday, the High Court ruled that when a company harms older workers more than younger ones, the company has to show it is not because of age. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports.
In the mid-1990s, Knowles Atomic Power Laboratory in upstate New York had to lay off workers. It designed a formula for who would go based on things like performance and skills. In the end, though, nearly everyone who got sacked was at least 40 years old, and most of them decided to sue. Among their arguments was this: regardless of the lab's intent, casting off so many older workers was discriminatory. Yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled it was up to employers to prove workers lost their jobs for reasons other than age. Dan Corman is a senior attorney with AARP, the National Advocacy Group for People 50 and Over. He praised the ruling and thinks it will encourage more suits.
Federal court for the last decade or more hasn't been a very hospitable place for these kind of claims. Now, older workers who feel that they've been disadvantaged by corporate downsizing, they can think, well, maybe I have a chance of challenging this.
But Neil Mullen, an employment attorney with the law firm Paul Hastings, doubts the ruling will have a big impact. He said that in the small number of suits that are close calls, it might tip the scales in favor of workers.
It's sort of a tie goes to the runner sort of thing.
Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Washington.
Coming up this afternoon on The World from PRI, cell phone text messaging is becoming the way to communicate in many countries. But each language has its own shorthand. A Spanish linguist has come up with a universal standard, the text language known as NOAL. That story in the day's global news coming up on The World this afternoon at 3 o'clock. And we hope you'll stay with us for All Things Considered. It follows at 4 o'clock. And on Fridays at 4:45 and 6:45, we feature the Public Square. The World and All Things Considered coming up this afternoon here on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Camp Rock debuts today on the Disney Channel. In case you've missed the weeks of promotions, it stars the teen pop family act, the Jonas Brothers. Disney wants to follow up on the success of a previous teen hit, High School Musical. NPR's Nat DeMeo reports.
Claire Hatch is 16.
They think it's a phase and then it'll go away.
And to say that much of her bedroom is wallpapered with pictures of the Jonas Brothers...
Holy cow.
...is perhaps to do an injustice to the wall-covering properties of wallpaper.
Yeah, you weren't really prepared for that, were you?
The bedrooms and iPods of America's youth are being systematically taken over by the Jonas Brothers. There's Kevin, the oldest at 20. He's the sweet one. Joe, the 18-year-old heartthrob. And 15-year-old Nick. He's the sensitive one. One day, when I came home at lunchtime, I heard a funny noise. For those well clear of their own teenage years, this might all sound familiar. Especially if you love JC from NSYNC, or Joey from the New Kids, or Donny Osmond, or Davy Jones from the Monkees. Music writer David Smay says that the Jonas Brothers are different from their forebears. They're backed by a marketing leviathan called the Walt Disney Company.
They control the product. They can put it on the Disney Channel. They have a radio station, Radio Disney, which has very far reach. And they can just pound on their market all day. And it's a huge, huge cash cow.
The music industry is obviously not in the greatest shakes right now.
Ann Donahue is a senior editor at Billboard magazine.
But the music side of Disney has been very smart because they also incorporate the other entertainment properties they have within the conglomerate. So also the fact that Disney is obviously targeted at the people who are still buying music, albeit in a digital form, I think that is also part of the reason why they're doing so well.
Chip McLean is also doing well. He heads Disney's enormously successful concert arm. He coordinates with the Disney Channel and Radio Disney in merchandising in their various record labels to make sure everyone's on the same page about how to define and package one of their brands, or if you prefer, teenagers.
Another division may release something, and then 6 months later we're out in the market touring around for a few months, and then 6 months later they come back with the next installment, kind of keeping the momentum going.
Billboard's Ann Donahue says the band was dropped from Columbia, its original label, last summer. Then Disney stepped in. Now, the push for the Joe Bros, as the fan shorthand goes, is in full gear. with strategically planned releases that will keep the brothers very busy for the next couple of years.
And that is premiering on June 20th at 8, 7 Central on Disney
Channel. Like any true fan, Claire Hatch has all the release dates and points of purchase memorized.